Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Kicking off week number 14 in the NFL, it is the Lombardi Line. Wow. I am Dave Ross here at Circus Sports in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. He is our GM, Michael Lombardi, back home in Jersey. Michael, can you believe it? 14 weeks, we're going to begin. you blink an eye and here we are.
I can't believe it.
And what a game to kick it off.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, right?
I'm not ready to talk baseball yet, David. Are you ready to talk Mets?
Only Juan Soto.
You're still waiting for Juan Soto to get signed, huh? Over $600 million, I saw that. Oh, my gosh.
And that's where we are. Like, you start to look at it and you go, man, we're in December. The NFL is going to be over here before we bat an eye. We're at the Super Bowl in February. But it is amazing how quickly the NFL season goes. We talk about it every year. This is a massive game tonight to kick it off here in week 14. Yeah. With the Packers and the Lions. Before we really break down the game, we'll have Harry Gagnon's going to join us here, hour number one. The great Mike Palm's going to be in studio for Palm's Pressing 3 in hour number two. I'm curious, when you look at Green Bay right now, and can they realistically, sure, they win this game tonight, they can still have visions of grandeur of winning the division. To you, is it paramount that if you're not Detroit, and you're either in Minnesota or Green Bay, that you actually win the division to have a realistic shot of going to the Super Bowl? Because I think we feel like Detroit could go either path. Obviously, least resistance is to win the division. Can the other two do that, or do they have to figure out a way to win the North in order to get all the way to the Super Bowl?
I mean, I think Green Bay's team, when you watch them play, they're a turf team. I mean, they play really well. They're fast, they're athletic, and they've got a power run game. And look, let's face it. I mean, Matt LaFleur in the month of December, as much as we want to criticize his hairstyle, I'm sure he's going to be groomed completely up today. But he's been really good in December. I mean, he's been dominant. He's 18-2 straight up in December, unlike Mike McDaniel, who can't win a game in December. Mm. Now, he's only 11-9 against the spread when he does that. But when he's an underdog, he's really good. You know, when he's an underdog, it's Mike Tomlin-like. He's 18-5 against the spread as an underdog of 3 points or more. So, and he's 14-3 as a dog with more than 3 points. So this game's situation sits up perfectly for him. Now, the problem for Detroit is they're just not healthy.
Right.
They're talking about moving Sewell over to left tackle because of Decker's injury, putting Skipper at right tackle. I'm not sure they want to do that because they run the ball so often to the right because of Sewell's dominance as a run defender, as a run blocker. And then, you know, they've got so many injuries on the defensive side of the ball when you look at it. Now, they say Carlton Davis may play today. Same thing with the Packers. They don't have Romeo Doubs going in the game. Jair Alexander, is he ever play? Does he ever play?
I mean, he's going to, looks like, you know, he's out again with that knee.
I mean, Big Daddy came by the house yesterday, and all he complained about was Jair Alexander, Of course, he complained about the Knicks, Mikal Bridges' jump shot, but we'll get to that later. You know, he's got a lot of complaints. But anyway, so I just felt like it was one of those there that, you know, that they're not healthy either. But to me, Green Bay, it's going to come down to Jordan Love. Mm. I really think so. And I think that we have given Jordan Love a pass here because of last year. And people remember that, where this guy has not played to the level that he needs to play for them to rise this team and get it to where it needs to go to become a Super Bowl team. And I think you can just see it. And it shows up, David, when you break down his – when you really break him down and you understand what he's trying to accomplish and his throws and his accuracy within the throws, I think that's the biggest issue. He's got to do a better job of getting the ball, being accurate with the football, and throwing it really, really well.
You know how this works. If you play, I mean, injuries are injuries, and sometimes you're hurt or you're injured, and you can play hurt, but sometimes you can't play injured. Has he, in your eyes, when you watch him, is this something from, you know, post-Brazil that he's been fighting through this entire season? I'm not trying to make an excuse for Jordan Love, obviously, but he has not seemed like the same guy that we saw at the end of last year, where he looked like an elite emerging quarterback that we saw really play really good football. What, 10 turnovers, 11 picks so far this year. And I know he had 10 of those, only had one pick in the last three, so 10 earlier. Do you feel like he's playing his way out of that funk? Is it just injury related, or is it also maybe not making the best decisions?
Well, I think sometimes he doesn't. No, he gets bailed out. You know, last week against Miami, he threw 75%. But the week before that against San Francisco, he had he turned the ball over a couple times. The only thing is Dobbs and Watson, they made plays and they turned those turnovers into receptions. He was 56% completion. I mean, he throws more under 60% completion than most starting quarterbacks in the league in an era where we don't have, where we're always having quarterbacks that throw the ball with great, you know, with really a good, tremendous sense of being able to be accurate with the football. And he hasn't really been able to do that. So I think to me that that's been the biggest concern that I've seen with him this year is his, he just hasn't been as accurate, hasn't been pinpoint accurate. Now he makes some great throws. The throw over to the corner to Reed last week against Miami was as good as it gets. But I think when you break them down, especially when you look at them and you see what he's done on third down. I mean, he's thrown interceptions on third down that you wouldn't want to have him make. And I think to me, that's the biggest concern.
You know, you go back a couple years ago and look, Ja'Marr Chase, everybody's going to go Ja'Marr Chase. That worked out with that pick in Cincinnati to go to Joe Burrow. But the Bengals offensive line's always been an issue. You mentioned Sewell, and in that same draft, the Lions got Sewell a little bit later than people think. Is he like quiet as kept? It feels like he doesn't get talked about enough, how important he is, obviously, to this offensive line, to the point you're talking about flipping over to left tackle to play because Decker's going to be out. How good has Sewell been for Jared Goff and protecting that right side of the line?
I think Sewell's in that category of you're going to put him in the Pro Bowl. I mean, you're going to put him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's how good Sewell is.
Wow.
You watch this guy play, and he's light on his feet. He's athletic. Playing right tackle is almost too easy for him. I mean, look, they run a goddamn trick play for him. You know, I mean, they let him carry the ball. That's how fast he is. I mean, this guy's dominant. These are rare to find. I mean, he reminds me of Anthony Munoz, you know. And one thing you always – I wrote about this in Football Done Right – is one thing you always want to notice, especially when they play out in grass, is if the offensive lineman's uniforms never gets dirty, that means he's never on the ground, which is a good thing. And this guy's never on the ground. He's really athletic. But where he shines the most is in the run game, where he gets such movement. Even when they run the ball left, they end up bringing it back to the right because he's created such movement in their run game. He sets them up. David Montgomery's a really good inside zone runner, and Sewell's a really good blocker. Look, I think the one thing, if you're building an offensive line, you got to be good at tackle and you got to be good at center. Nobody talks about you need to be good at center, but you watch the Rams play, for example, you know, because of the injuries, they're not good at center. It affects your team. You got to control the middle of the front. And I think we saw that with Kelsey and the Eagles. And we see this with Frank Ragnon, who's playing with almost a torn bicep, and he's still playing at a high, high level. So this line is really good, and it'll be a challenge for Green Bay. Look, I think Green Bay, you know, has played this team. They're comfortable playing them. You know, they understand what they have to do to Jared Goff. They've got to get into the paint on Jared Goff. They got to pressure him inside. But more than anything, you've got to stop Detroit from running the football. Detroit's a balanced team, and so is Green Bay.
When you look at the numbers, right now favorites on Thursdays, 53-18 straight up. So that's a really nice clip here, 3 out of 4, 75%. But they're not covering numbers, 38-33 ATS. That's through the years, obviously. So this isn't all Detroit Packers, but just for what it's worth. Is there anything to that, though, Michael, about you got the short week, it's late in the year. Is it a big advantage to play at home in that short week? And it's not big travel, obviously, for Green Bay to go to Detroit. But the point being that being on the road, it is certainly normally tougher to win on the road anyway. And then to do it on a short week, does that play into it at all for that 75% clip straight up?
Yeah, I think it helps you, certainly. And I mean, look, Detroit's a great football town. It's a great stadium. I mean, it's really a beautiful stadium, and it's loud, and it will create some problems. But Green Bay went in there on Thanksgiving Day last year and just whooped them, right?
Yep.
They went up and down the field on them. The Detroit couldn't cover them. But Detroit's playing better defensively. But the problem with Detroit is without Alex Andalone, without him, they've got David Long they just picked up off the street. I don't know if they're going to activate Jamal Adams, but DJ Reader's not going to play inside, which is another guy that they need to go along with Aleem McNeil. When they have those defensive tackles inside, it really creates pressure on the quarterback, on a guy like Jordan Love, and they're going to have to step up their coverage. I think one of the great things about Detroit has been Brian Branch. He's been outstanding in coverage. He's a really good tackler. but they're going to have to find a way. I mean, this is a game where Za'Darius Thomas, Za'Darius Smith, he's going to have to really have a good game to help them to get some pressure off the edge. But this Green Bay Packer team, one of the best pass blocking offensive lines in football. So it's really hard to get to Love. And if Love, if they can, they've got to. But I think one of the things we have to consider too is Jared Goff. I mean, Goff is 15-6 against the spread versus the NFC North. For whatever reason it is, this guy plays really good against the North.
You know, I thought last year you referenced that Thanksgiving Day game a year ago, and it was really from pillar to post. It was Green Bay up and down the field 60 minutes, right? And I thought, oh, they'll limit possessions. They'll try, you know, they don't want to play, you know, go fire for fire. They did. And they won relatively easily. Is that where maybe, you know, they still look at it and say, we can play that style with Detroit. They are banged up defensively. We don't have to, you know, try to be protective and hold on to a lead. Like, we can go after them a little bit with Jordan Love and these receivers everywhere. Or do you think it would behoove them to try to play Josh Jacobs, run the ball, control the ball, and limit possessions for Detroit?
Look, I think the offense runs through Jacobs. There's no question, but this offense can throw the football effectively. They're the number two team in the National Football League in yards per attempt. They get it down the field, right? And they're 30th in the league in attempting it. So that they're a little bit like Philadelphia, right? They don't throw it all the time, but when they do, watch out, right? They're going to throw it down the field and they're going to make an explosive play. So they are, the model that they have, they are very similar to Philadelphia. And this year, what they've done a good job of is they've been able to play the run. They're the seventh best team in the National Football League in yards per attempt against their defense, and they're only eighth in yards allowed. So they really have done a good job of stopping the opponent from running the football.
This game opened 551. It's got down as low as 3. It's back up to 3.5. That total a tick higher here, 51.5. Boy, if Green Bay gets this win tonight, Michael, the NFC North is wide open for those top three teams.
If they get this win tonight, that's the best thing that could happen for Philadelphia, because that puts all that, that means that line in Carolina might go back up to 13.
Oh my, everything would be in play in the NFC. When we come back, news out of Jacksonville and beyond. It's next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi with you today. And Michael, I know you talked about it a lot here in the network on your podcast and the GM Shuffle all summer about Trevor Lawrence. And I think the question was, you know, you pay these guys and you pay Trevor and you pay Dak. Injuries can always be a factor in it. And I felt like the question was, is this now still the franchise quarterback, the number one pick that you had out of Clemson, the generational talent? Now it looks like he's going to be placed on IR. So Mac Jones is going to get the start today. So kind of a twofold question for you. One, what have you seen out of Mac Jones to try to resurrect his career? And two, has he answered those questions that you had all summer?
I think there's still questions about Trevor Lawrence. Is he really that good? And who knows? I mean, they haven't been well coached the last 3 years with Doug Peterson. That offense has been all over the place. In fact, I know talking to teams that, you know, they don't even put Jacksonville's offense on their game sheets because it's just, to me, chaotic. And so I think, to me, the jury's still out on Trevor Lawrence. I think you have to find some way to run an offense through him. He's better when he has the ball and he's running. The problem is he's gotten hurt so often. He can't hold up with the contact. There's a lot of questions. Now, Urban Meyer came out yesterday on social media, which we're all waiting for, to see who he would endorse for the next head coach, even though they have a head coach in Jacksonville. And he's pushing Ben Johnson. And, you know, and he just went out of his way to say, don't hire the old guy. Obviously, you know, he was referring to Coach Belichick. But, you know, I mean, I would do the opposite of what Urban Meyer suggested. I think that's probably would be a good thing.
Why would anybody down in Duval listen to Herb? Does that make any sense?
That just shows you how out of control his ego is. That just shows you. Like, he thinks that people still think he's vibrant, you know, and that he has an opinion. I mean, come on.
Let's face it.
Let's face it. He couldn't even last a whole season down there. It was so bad. And they gave him the keys to the store.
Everything.
But that place is a mess. Now, you asked me about Mac Jones. Prior to the game against Houston, he scored 13 points in two games. He was horrible in both those games. And then against Houston, when they got behind 23-6, all of a sudden he became a better player. I think Houston were allowing him to make some plays, knowing they had control of the game. They allowed it to be too close, and it cost me a point in my Russo contest, which I'm forever bitter about. But we'll let that slide. You know, to me, I think you got to take Tennessee here. I mean, Tennessee being a 3.5-point favorite, Dave, that's all you need to know about Mac Jones.
Yeah.
3.5-point. Why would Tennessee be a favorite against anybody?
I mean,
look, here's the reality. Tennessee's defense got embarrassed on Sunday in Washington, right? They turned the ball over. They played poorly. Now they're coming home. And I think Will Levis, for as much as I've complained about him all year, he has played better. He still makes too many mistakes for me, but they have played better, but they can't not turn the ball over and just give it up like they did on a kickoff return, and then Pollard fumbles. The next thing you know, you're down 21-0. So, look, Jacksonville's not a good team right now. This will be a harder game for them with Mac Jones, the quarterback.
Yeah, this is one of those games I go, do they actually play these games? Yeah, they're going to play Jacksonville and Tennessee, and it's going to be Mac Jones against Will Levis. So two guys really trying to still kickstart their careers if it's possible at this stage. Another guy like that would be Drew Lock in New York, and he's going to get the start for the G-men against the Saints. And maybe you can say the same thing about Derek Carr, of like still trying to show that, yes, I'm still the guy here in New Orleans. For the Drew Lock position here, and the numbers come down, it's 4.5 here. Saints were up as high as 5.5, it's down to 4.5. What do you make of Drew Lock? This is his third team too, right? Gets traded away from Denver in that Russell Wilson deal, has the one miraculous game, if you will, on the Monday night against the Eagles to get that win. Now he's been backing up Daniel Jones, who's no longer there in New York. What do we make of this? Is this a last shot for Drew Lock to prove he's an NFL starting quarterback potentially?
Well, you know, look, I think this, the giant team behind this offensive line, I know the Saints were disappointed last week. And these are the kind of games, though, Dave, that I think Derek, Ricky Fowler, Carr plays good in. I really do. I think these are the one. There's no pressure on them. Nobody will be watching, no. Right? This is Thursday at the Houston Open, right? I mean, this is the, right? This is, you know, the Arnold Palmer Thursday event down at Bay Hill, right?
Not a major.
You know, come out and shoot 62. Right. Yeah, not a major. Nobody's watching. You know, it's going to be perfect and usually play well. They're, with Dexter Lawrence not in the game, you know, look, the one thing I do think about the Saints, I think losing Taysom Hill, really puts way too much pressure on Derek Carr, because all those third downs when they would put Hill in on 3rd and 2, 3rd and 1, they put Hill in the game. Even when he has to throw it, he's better than Carr. Like if they would have had Taysom Hill in the game at the end, he would have probably thrown the little smash route for the first down, and they would have moved the sticks. But Carr held the ball for 8 hours and got sacked and lost the game. So look, this will be a hard game. I think the Saints, Darren Rizzi comes home, right? He's a Bergen Catholic graduate. Bergen Catholic, one of the best football programs in the state of New Jersey here. They won the state championship again. The only loss they had was the game that Coach Belichick and I went to here in Ocean City when they lost to IMG Academy. So they were great. And the whole fan base from Bergen Catholic's coming out to root for Rizzi. And I think the team responded to him. I really do. And, you know, this will be – I think they're still playing hard for their coach. I don't know if I can say the same thing about the Giants.
Yeah.
Look, this Giant, I mean, when you look at the numbers now, I was going through it this morning, and this is just remarkable. The Giants are on a 7-game ATS losing streak at home against them. They have longest ATS losing streak as a franchise in the Super Bowl era. Now, let's bring everybody back, because we're really seeing progress, right? I mean, that's what John Mara is saying to everybody. We're not going to make any changes. And I'm just reading you this. If they don't cover on Sunday, they would also own a 5-game ATS losing streak at home. Their longest as a franchise since 2003. I mean, things are not good in New York.
No, I don't know how you back the G-men. It does feel like a team, you hate to use the Q word, but it feels like they've quit in the season. And they do feel like they're still playing hard for Rizzi down there in New Orleans. One guy's not playing it hard, and really not playing at all, is Deontay Johnson. Talk about interesting guys that are already well-traveled in their young careers. Ravens are off this week, but he won't be playing next week when they play the Giants off their bye week. He's been suspended by the team one game for conduct detrimental. Here's the conduct. He was asked to go in against the Eagles. He refused to go in. Michael, I just don't get that. I'm the employee.
I don't know why they don't cut him. You know why they don't cut him? They gave up a draft pick. They don't want to embarrass themselves.
That's the reason.
Right? You should just cut him. Like, you can't have this guy on the team. Look, when Pittsburgh gets rid of a guy, right? When Pittsburgh gets rid of a guy, you know it's – for when they just give a guy away, you know it's a problem. And then Carolina, who need a receiver,
yes,
just got rid of him. They couldn't tolerate it. And they got better in their locker room when they got rid of the guy. He's disruptive from within. And the Baltimore, to me, they know this. They want to get rid of him. They suspended him for a game. I think they're too embarrassed because they gave up a draft pick. But, you know, as they said in The Sopranos about Vito, he's got to go.
Yeah.
He's got to go.
I just, look, if you're the employee and the employer tells you, I need you to work, and you say, no, I'm not going to go to work, why are you still employed? It's a very fair question. I don't know what the Ravens are doing.
I'm sure DaCosta, the general manager of the Ravens, probably is embarrassed that he gave up a draft pick for this guy and they don't want to cut him. That's why he's still on the team.
Mm.
But this guy, everywhere, if you talk to people in Pittsburgh, if you talk to people in Carolina, they will tell you this guy is a very challenging young man to handle. He's disruptive from within, and nobody wants any part of him.
Good luck the rest of the way with Deontay Johnson if he's on your roster here, Baltimore, come postseason time. A reunion in Orchard Park because Micah Hyde is back. How about that? Didn't see that coming. Yeah. He's been added to their practice squad. This almost feels like to me, hey, we love the guy. Let's have him back in our facility. Put him on the practice squad. Maybe be a coach for us one day. Who knows? What do you make of the Micah Hyde news?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think he's more going to be a coach, help everybody out. I mean, Sean went out of his way to say, hey, he's on the practice squad. He's going to retire at the end of the year. That smells like a coach, like
yes.
Keep everybody in order. And I think stability within the locker room. And they may need him. You know, they may need him. He may not be in football shape right now, but they may need him down the stretch.
So he is back for 4-point favorites in L.A. against the Rams this weekend. A couple other news and notes. I just want to run by you. I know that the Bears have been looking at their number all week. 4 against San Francisco, got as low as 3.5 on the road. But DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, DeAndre Swift all didn't practice on Wednesday. Michael, is that just end of the year stuff? We're going to safeguard those guys? Because I don't know if I want to be a part of that 4 unless I know those guys on offense are going to be playing.
Well, 40 teams have fired their coach during the regular season, and those teams have gone 18-22 straight up, and they're 23-17 against the spread. So for all the instances and the belief that we think that you get an uptick when you bring in a new coach,
yeah,
that's not always the case. Certainly it is a little positive towards that, but it's not necessarily always going to be the case. It isn't the Mike Tomlin as a dog or even Matt LaFleur as a dog where you feel really good about playing that. You know, I think to me, you'll see a lot of these do not practices on Wednesday, Dave, at this time of the year in December. Now, I think that's part of the problem because when you don't practice this time of the year, your pad level gets too high and you're not as effective as a team.
Speaking of practice, you can always play the Pick 6 from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. It's very easy. All you have to do is download the DraftKings Pick 6 app. When you do, you can select two or more players and choose if they're going to have more or less of a stat, such as, say, points, rebounds, three-pointers, or more. So new Pick 6 players can play $5, get $50 in Pick 6 credits. So download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now. Use code VSIN. That is $5 for new customers. You're going to get $50 in Pick 6 credits. When we come back, Harry Gagnon has been really hot with a lot of his prop picks. Also, we'll get his sides and totals. That's next year on the Lombardi.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Beginning of week 14 of the NFL is almost upon us. Tonight it'll be Detroit hosting Green Bay. Dave Ross, Michael Lombardi here with you. And who better to talk about it here on a Thursday than our friend Harry Gagnon joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line, the host of the Against All Odds podcast. You can follow Harry on X at AAO Harry. Welcome back to the program. You've been on fire on your picks when you're on the show, as you normally are. Looking at this game tonight, Michael and I really were breaking it down here to begin the show today. What style of play do you see tonight? Because that total sitting at 51.5. And I know a lot of times, Harry, people think running leads to unders, but these two teams run it effectively. Could the over still be in play even if it's a running clock?
I like the over, guys. Good morning. You know, and also, I think, you know, you can't really base a lot off of the first time they played in that slop when they played in Green Bay in the rain and everything. I do like the over 51.5 here, guys. Look, you know, Chicago gave Detroit a game, especially in the second half last week on Thanksgiving. Even Caleb Williams tossed 3 second-half touchdowns against Detroit. Last year, these two meetings between these two averaged 53 points. This season, the Lions are still first in the league in scoring at 32 points a game. They're second guys in total yards per game. Meanwhile, Green Bay's offense is clicking. They've scored 30-plus points the last two games. Love has four touchdowns, no picks over those games. And Josh Jacobs has been fantastic. He's got four touchdowns as well over those last two games with 200-plus scrimmage yards. I like this close game, entertaining game on Thursday. 31-27, game goes over 51.5.
Yeah, I think to me, the only thing I would caution here is both teams do love to run the football, and that does eat the clock. But I do think you're right, Harry. Both teams are really explosive in the passing game, and they understand they need chunk plays. Green Bay, the number two team in the National Football League in yards per attempt passing, and we know Detroit can put 30 points against anybody. So I kind of agree with you here. I do think it, but a lot of it is about the pace. So I think that one. Let's take the Southeast Conference Championship game since we're on a over-under total mount by you, and I can't wait to get to your teaser where we're going to go with wrestling and then football. We can put those two things together. Georgia, Texas, you're going to go under in this game.
I am going to go under 49.5 in this game. The first meeting obviously went under 49, and Georgia held yours to just 15 points and 211 yards passing. Over the Longhorns' last four conference games, guys, they're giving up just 12 points per game. Three of Georgia's last four conference games have gone under 49. And the last four conference games for Beck, he has just four touchdown passes, seven picks. Oh, and by the way, in last year's SEC title game, Beck had also zero touchdowns.
Mm. Harry, I've been waiting all week to ask you this because I know you break some quote-unquote gambling norms out there of what you can and cannot do, okay? So when I saw the Clemson SMU number flip, because remember Clemson open 2.5, and then it just immediately got bet all the way up for SMU 2.5. My flag went up on my head and said, "Well, wait a minute, can I tease Clemson up? Why can't we tease college football, but yet it's okay to tease NFL football?"
I know. Just you get those blowouts so many times. Kids are so young, and once you get away from your ideas and plans for the games, it can really get away from you. This is an interesting game, guys, though, because obviously they didn't play in the regular season. And now SMU's 2.5 point. But I wonder if I still think the way they broke it down with the top 12 and then showing who's 13, who's 14. If SMU plays a close game, I still think they're in this. Clemson, very fortunate, tough game to figure out. A lot of times these two teams have scored a ton of points. SMU can put up 40 with the best of them. They average about 40. So if I had to pick a side, I don't love this game. I am rooting for SMU. I want to see some new blood in there, but I would lean towards the over 55.5, and that's when I've had to pick something.
And Harry, do you feel like that SMU can compete? I mean, the hard part is handicapping college and the schedule. Like, you know, Army's undefeated, Navy's undefeated. They get killed when they go play good teams. I mean, what's your level of confidence with SMU?
Well, look, you know, I'll put it this way. They have they're running back over 1,200 yards, 17 rushing touchdowns. And when – put it this way. When Pittsburgh beat Syracuse and picked off McCord five times and returned three of them for touchdowns, the next week they play at SMU, and everybody thought, oh, all of a sudden now Pittsburgh is the hot team. And Pittsburgh went down to SMU and got their butts kicked by the Mustangs. So I know they're kind of a new team to some people, but still, this team can be very explosive, especially on offense. So I'm excited for this game. And I am rooting for the Mustangs here, I got to be honest.
You know, you look up, you see the Pony Express, if we can still use that phrase, is 28-1 to win the national championship. Even though we don't know if they're going to be in this new playoff system here, Harry, of 12, right? Indiana is in, and they're 40-1. So do you look down the board a little bit and say, well, why would I take a shot at SMU, who if they lose, the committee could put Alabama, you know, figure out ways to, right? Like, is that a danger when you're looking down the board a little bit?
Yeah, because that's definitely a risk. That's with futures, you're always taking a risk at something like that. But, you know, at 40-1, look, I think Indiana's getting a bit disrespected there. still only have the one loss. It was a tight game until the punters muffed the snap, and then Ohio State took it in, and then it got away from Indiana there. But that was the only time really all season anything got away from them. They were rolling everybody. They played a tough game and a close game against Michigan. And people thought that was, oh, well, maybe Indiana's not that good. But look what Michigan did to Ohio State last week. So who knows, Dave? But still, you know, at 40-1, when you look at those odds for everybody else with a team that's got one loss, it's not terrible. It's worth a little shot.
Harry, let's go with your famous teasers. You've been hot as hell. give me the teaser special of the week, please.
Okay, the teaser special of the week, guys.
Here you know, and I tease you. I don't understand. To me, the ultimate teaser would be if you could somehow put Iowa wrestling in with a pro game. I mean, that would be amazing if you could do that. But right, we'll just stick with what you can do here.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to do 7-point pro teaser. Last week, I got off the rails a little bit. I know Dave loved it when I went, you know, college and pro. Boy, Wisconsin laid an egg for me, and then Denver came through. So, listen, I'm going to go both pros here. 7-point teaser, Eagles from 12.5 down to 5.5 against the Panthers. 8 straight wins for the Eagles. Hurts and Barkley are rolling. Panthers playing tough. They're playing tough the whole last month. But Bryce Young is going against a machine right now. And a defensive machine that's going to give him tons of problems. So give me the Eagles from 12.5 down to 5.5 at home. And I'm taking the Dolphins all the way down to from 6.5 minus to +0.5. Miami 3-1 straight up against the spread the last 4. The Jets are just awful. They're finding new ways to lose. Miami is just fine as long as you keep them away from cold weather. We saw what happened Thursday night. That was pretty bad. But back home, again, Jets awful last week, blew that game. Raiders, the Rodgers just turned 41 years old, guys, a couple of days ago. And 1-8, Aaron Rodgers, 1-8 in his last 9 games overall. Miami wins at home, keeps their slim playoff hopes alive. So the 2-team teaser, Eagles minus 5.5 versus Carolina, and the Dolphins at home. +0.5 against the Jets.
Yeah, Mike and I have been talking about that game all week, Harry. We just don't understand why the money keeps coming into the Jets.
I love that
teaser there towards the Miami side. Very quickly, for the prop play tonight on Thursday Night Football, and, you know, normally you look at it and go, man, do I want to lay this number? Well, you know, David Montgomery's been pretty darn good. They've been a pretty good goal line, not just goal line back, but you get down in that red zone. They like to run Montgomery, and they're very physical. Is that why you don't mind laying the juice here with Montgomery to score tonight?
I don't mind laying it. Montgomery, anytime touchdown. You're right, Dave. Last 4 games versus Green Bay, Montgomery has a total of 5 touchdowns. He scored at least 1 in 10 of his last 12 games at Ford Field. And how about this one, guys? I looked this one up, did my homework here. He actually didn't score last week versus Chicago. So he is in jeopardy of not scoring a touchdown in 2 straight games for this only the second time in his last 29 games. That's pretty crazy. And in his last 3 Thursday night games, he has scored in all of them, guys, totaling 5 total touchdowns in those 3 games.
So he is due because that's just what David Montgomery does. Harry, great stuff as always.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what he does. I appreciate you having on the Progressive Guest Line with us. We look forward to it every week.
Always, guys. And by the way, real quick, NBA tonight. How about this one? Throw the bonus pick in here. Pelicans have lost 15-16, but I'm taking a -1 in a fishy line. Durant out of the game, just 1-6, the Suns. Without Durant.
Playing the Pellies, laying the 4.5. Back with Michael's top 10 teams in the NFL next year in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here in the Lombardi Line, Dave Ross and Mike Lombardi. A lot of fun having Harry Gagnon in the last segment. We're going to have Mike Palm join us in studio in hour number 2. So I know, Michael, you're already prepared mentally for the Palm's pressing 3 because that's coming in hour number 2.
Always.
You got to get ready for Mike's questions. He's going to grill you. I've got some questions for you, sir, on your top 10 NFL teams, and they do change based on your numbers. Let's go, if we could, for a team that dropped out of your top 10. And it's interesting because the Chargers got a win, but it wasn't pretty. But the numbers to you, Michael, it knocked them out and put the Broncos in.
Again, you know, let's go over it. I mean, we talk about this every week, but this is all about numbers. And, you know, these numbers are moving very little now because of so much data that's put into it. So we're seeing not the shock of, because early in the season, you know, numbers change and sure. You could have a bad game, good game, yada, yada. But I think to me, they're right there. When I break down these teams, I mean, the Chargers are just right on the edge of it. Denver just moved slightly above them. Even though Denver gave up a ton of yards defensively, you would have thought they would have moved down. But Denver's playing so well, I think, to me, that's the key. And Dave, what's remarkable is I have 10 teams. Well, let me count it. 3, 6, 9. I have 11 teams below 190 points, ooh, which is really rare. Really rare. So there's 18 categories, right? Mm-hmm. And they all have the same amount of importance within the calculation. And so I have 18 teams that that go under 200. It's usually an average team, 250, 225 in that area. But when you have 11 teams below that, there's some really good teams. And then the problem is the bottom falls out. I've got 10 teams below over 300.
Oof.
The numbers point out exactly what we've been talking about on this network is there's some good teams, there's 10 or 11 good teams, and there's 10 or 11 really bad teams. And that's what makes betting the number or taking the dog so challenging in this situation, because the variance between it. Now we're seeing Carolina, they're still the worst team in the league, but they've moved up. I mean, actually the Raiders are moving closer to Carolina based on their numbers. Jacksonville, the same thing. So there's such a variance in that area. You know, the team that is really low in almost every single is Atlanta.
Wow.
Atlanta's as bad as any team, you know, and they're in first place in their division. And I think the 5.5 is too many points. So I thought, like, that's a perfect example. I thought Atlanta 5.5 going to Minnesota was too many points. And my numbers say that line should be 7.
Oof, wow. And again, I love this because, again, it takes everything out of it. This is for people out there going, oh, my goodness, how could you move up the Broncos and move the Commanders down? And they put up a whooping on the Titans. The numbers are leading Michael to his top 10 list. This is nothing to do with eye test or subjectivity. It's just by the numbers. And what I find very interesting, too, in your 6 through 10 is look at the Chiefs and Ravens. That we thought were, quote unquote, there's no locks, but like these are the two best teams in the AFC. I think we kind of thought that early in the year. They're now 7-8. So, and they move up.
And 1 point separates them.
Right. They're very, very close. Well, even though one team is 5 losses,
they're really close.
And then the other team is 1 loss.
Yeah. And 1 point separates them. And really only 11 points separates them from Pittsburgh and Green Bay. Mm. So this is really tight. I mean, the two teams that are significantly better than everybody else is Philly and Detroit. And
right.
That's not, you know, every fan kind of senses that, right? And then you get into Buffalo. Minnesota's numbers have been so good. I know they win close games, but their numbers are good in all the categories. And why do they win close games? You ask, well, it's not luck. It's because they're able to win the categories that go towards winning, right? You win close games when you can execute 4-minute offense. You win close games when you can score at the end of the half. You win close games when you convert certain situations in football. You don't win close games when you can't do that. And that's why some of the teams, when we look at the Chicago Bears with Matt Eberflus, they couldn't win a close game because in the situational football element, they couldn't really handle it. So, look, I you know what's going to be fascinating, Dave, is if we get a Lions-Eagles conference championship game, I really feel like that will be our Super Bowl. I think the winner of that game will win the Super Bowl because I say that and then I couch it. But, see, I think Buffalo will have a hard time playing Philly or
Detroit.
Because Buffalo can't stop the run. The way Buffalo stops the run is with their offense. You get behind them, and then everybody abandons the run game. And so that's how they kind of do it. They're small. I mean, Buffalo is the outlier. They're a small team that's able to get by because of their quarterback. They're 21 rushing touchdowns. They're so good in that area. You know, Josh Allen gets the ball. Teams that can run the ball in the end zone, that's another category you have to look at in this statistic. When you can run the ball into the end zone effectively, you're a really good team. When you can stop teams from running the ball into the end zone, you're a good team.
You know, what's fascinating is Detroit obviously playing tonight as 3.5-point favorites against the Packers. They will then get that mini bye, and then they're going to play the Bills. So we're going to get Buffalo and Detroit next week. And remember, Buffalo is playing out in L.A. this week. So that'll be interesting to see Buffalo doing that two-step in L.A. this week and then in Detroit the following week to see if we get any, quote-unquote, you know, Super Bowl preview, how that affects your numbers. Also, if we sat here, Michael, in July, and you said my number's going to bear out at week 14, that Minnesota and Pittsburgh are power rated in my top five, people would have looked at you like you had eight heads. I mean,
no question.
It is amazing to see the ascension of these two football teams. And I don't think it's by happenstance here. These defenses kind of lead them, right?
Yeah. Well, I think this too, though. You know, the idea we take is we look at paper and we say they're just not good when we don't realize football's a three-dimensional game.
Yeah.
And, you know, this week on Inside the NFL or Hard Knocks, whatever they call it, you could see Mike Tomlin, how he coached his team. And he does a presentation about what we have to do to beat Cincinnati and what it takes to beat Cincinnati. And it's really good. And I think to me, that was something that Coach Belichick did. It's called point of emphasis. It's like, what do we have to do to win this game? And I think to me, that's what we as bettors and handicappers don't always necessarily, we don't give the strategist, the head coach, the leader enough credit for figuring out how to win the game and how to play the game, right? We just look at the talent, and that's one thing to look at, but the way that they're set up, the way that Pittsburgh is set up with their ability, with Arthur Smith running the offense, controlling what they do, running the football, being able to slow the game down, Boswell being sensational, and then their defense being able to turn the ball over, create mismatches up front. You know, and I think that's what separates them. And, you know, you have to take that into account. And some people typically don't, and give Minnesota credit. They're really good. Minnesota's the fifth best team in the National Football League in first half point differential. Mm-hmm. See, this is no one talks about this on pregame shows or anywhere, but the most important stat in determining who's going to the Super Bowl is first half point differential.
Wow.
Detroit's number one in that category with 121. When you can get the lead on teams in the first half, and universally, it's always the case. Now, Philly, because they can't score in the first quarter, they're only 13 in this area. They go into halftime with just a 16-point differential. When they went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago, they scored 204 points in the second quarter alone.
Fascinating. I just love the fact that the number is going to bear this out each and every week. As you mentioned, not as much movement here as we get towards the end of the year. But still, that is fascinating when you have those inside the numbers looks at Pittsburgh and Minnesota in the top five with the top two that we mentioned, Detroit and Philadelphia and Buffalo now cemented into that three spot. By the way,
but the one other point I want to add to you, one other point I want to add, Dave, is I don't think you can just play this as a numbers game. You have to play it with some feel. And that's what I've learned here at VSiN for 6 years is it's one thing to think that the matchup is the numbers. For example, this Minnesota game, we know Kirk Cousins is coming back, right? So there's going to be high motivation on Atlanta. There's going to be high motivation on Minnesota. They know how to stop them, and it's going to be a tough environment. And when does Kirk Cousins play well in a tough environment? But I think you got to kind of factor all that in, right? And I think that's why the line's at 5.5. But when you look at Atlanta now, last week they changed not dramatically, but they shifted how they play defensively because they knew they needed to do it. And I think it caught the Chargers off guard. It will not catch Minnesota off guard in this week because I watched it on tape this week.
Yeah, I think you're right. It feels like I don't want to say the public, but it just feels like the Falcons have been, oh, this is where we have to play it. But the number keeps going up to Minnesota side, up to 5.5. And I think you're kind of getting inside of why that number and the movement is the correct movement here so far on the Vikings side here. By the way, Josh Applebaum for Thursday Night Football is going to break down all the splits that certainly DraftKings has and Circa has. Go to VSiN.com. College hoops is well underway. Hoops Peterson's got you covered there. Steve Mackinnon, incredible numbers, as Steve always has here in the network, are going to break down those conference championship games that kick off on Friday. Dave Tooley, his takes daily on college football. Adam Burke's got the first touchdown score for the NFL in Week 14. And Zach Cohen, great job with the NBA. So as little as $9.99, you're going to get access to all of that information each and every day when you go to VSiN.com. So never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. We've got a lot to get to in hour number two, Michael, and we'll get to our Lombardi Line game of the week. And it's not just this one tonight on Thursday night, a big one on Sunday between the Chargers and the Chiefs. We'll break it down in hour number two here on the Lombardi Line.